Welcome to Punk Frockers, a community sewing podcast brought to you by Jenny Hassler and Beverly Baptiste. So, Jenny, what does a community sewing podcast actually look like? I mean, what is Punk Frockers all about?
So we're going to be looking at a monthly theme that's probably going to be based around some sort of sewing technique or a fiber or an era or something like that for everyone to participate in at your skill level, sewing your preferred type of garment so that we can work together to create something kind of interesting and shareable, but not educational.
We're here to have fun and have some community sewing. So are these going to be challenges like you have to make a chartreuse floor length gown?
You know, that sounds a little bit outside of what we would normally want to do, but it might be something like, how can you incorporate a different edge finish than you've ever used into something? Here's a bunch of edge finishes that are options. Or it might be, what's the most interesting denim thing you think you could make? And it may be that your most interesting denim thing is a pair of jeans that fit, because I did that recently and it's awesome. But it also might be a wedding gown out of denim. I don't know. There's a lot of options there, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really fun to see what people come up with. I mean, people in the sewing community are so creative and inventive, and I think it's going to be really, really fun to see what they do. Another fun part about it is that we plan to have some prizes.
That is true. I am all about prizes. If you follow me at all on Instagram, you definitely know that. And there's nothing more fun than giving away little doodads or having companies that would like to have you think about their patterns give away doodads. So there's some really good stuff coming up that'll be fun. In addition, I think that we're also really interested in making sure that people feel included in these challenges and the inspiration you might be able to draw from them. So we're going to make sure that when we're talking about patterns, we're generally talking about patterns that go up to at least a size 55, 56 hip. And where we can, we're going to include conversation on larger ones, because my hips are 61 inches and I'd prefer to talk about things that'll fit my body. So that's definitely going to be something available via this. In addition, I think the other part that's going to be super fun is that Beverly and I are just, we're chatty and we have a good time going off on tangents. So hopefully you'll enjoy that as well.
Yes. And we hope that if we're doing something that makes you feel not included in this group, you'll tell us. We're happy to learn new things and change the way we do things to include the most people possible.
Absolutely. So is the podcast really going to be aimed, do you think, at plus size sewists?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the reason we're including those sizes is so that we can include everyone, so that we're not talking about a bunch of patterns and people go to look for them and then they're not available in their size. I think that's, we don't want people to feel bad about that. I'm a straight size sewist myself, but I definitely want everybody to feel welcome in our podcast.
Yeah, it can be a really tough space. And sometimes it can be a tough space to have both straight size and plus size people in, because there are those barriers between what you can make and what I can make based on what pattern companies design. So I like that we're going to try and make sure we're including plenty of conversation about companies that cover both sizes, or in some cases that specialize like Muna and Broad in plus size sewing specifically. So that's awesome. Good to know.
That we should let people know though, is you don't have to choose an inclusive pattern to be included in the challenge. If you have a pattern that's for just tiny, tiny people and it fits you, that's great. You can still use that. We're just talking about the patterns that we promote on the podcast.
Absolutely. Everybody should feel comfortable making for themselves. And occasionally, very rarely these days, I'll pick a straight size pattern and go for the challenge of making it 20 inches bigger in the hips. It's not super common for me, but it is a thing that does happen from time to time.
Well, that's great. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So how does the name of this podcast fit in? Who do we think we are calling ourselves a punk frocker?
We are strong, independent, and rebellious women. and people of other gender presentations, non-binary, men, whatever you are. If you're strong, independent, and rebellious, or you incorporate those ideas into your sewing, or you want to, it's a really good fit here. On the other hand, if you're really less about being a rebellious sewer and you're more interested in the community conversation around sewing and social norms and things like that, you're going to fit in really well too, because that's really what punk rock's all about, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, truth be told, sewists just really like puns.
I mean, to be fair, we did go off looking for a punny name, and Punk Frockers is really ballers. So you can understand how that would happen.
Jenny gets full credit for coming up with that name.
I was so happy with myself. How often are we going to be doing new episodes?
We are going to be doing them weekly. Look for them every Tuesday. When you wake up in the morning, they should be right there in however you receive your podcasts. We should be having them shipped out to all the different outlets for that.
That's awesome. And during the month, I think we're going to basically try and stick to within our weeklies. Our first week of the month, we'll introduce our theme and sort of talk about ideas, maybe discuss the previous month's winner. Not applicable during our first month, naturally. And then the last week of the month, of course, we're going to reveal what we've made and talk about what we've seen other people making, as, of course, you'll be using our hashtag in order to share those things with us. And in between, you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff about maintaining your sojo or getting it back, or where inspiration is found, or where frustration is found, what's happening in the sewing community, any new controversial things that we should be chatting about, that's going to come up there as well.
Also, at the last episode of each month, in our show notes, we're going to include a clue for the next month's theme.
Oh, that's so fun. I forgot about that.
Yes. So if you get onto the show notes, which will just be at punkfrockers.com, you'll see all of the patterns that we mentioned. We'll put links to everything we can think of in there, make it try to be one place shopping for you as far as looking at all the things we talked about. And in addition, there'll be a clue for the next one. And maybe in our social media sites, you can talk about what you think that clue might mean.
And that's awesome, because of course, talking about what the clue might mean may be one of the places where prizes are available. You never know. We look forward to doing a lot of stuff with that. In addition, on our social media, of course, you're going to be able to find us on Facebook and on Instagram so that we can have that community experience.
That's right. So, Jenny, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about you?
Absolutely. I have not perfected my elevator pitch, but I'm going to give it a go. I've been sewing for about 40 years. I am 52 years old. My mom taught me to sew. One of the first things I ever made was a fully lined pink polyester blend linen suit to wear to Washington, D.C. as a member of the safety patrols. I believed this to be the most magnificent thing that had ever been made. Photographs indicate it may perhaps have been less excellent than my memory indicates it is. I later taught my daughters to sew, and they had no interest at all in it until my younger daughter decided to become a cosplayer, won a contest, and decided she'd like to learn to sew properly so she could keep doing that. And she's continued that tradition. It's been pretty amazing. Now I sew for my granddaughters. For a lot of years, I quit sewing, though. I stepped away from the clothing sewing community because it was exhausting from the time I was a teenager, when I was much smaller than I am now, but still sized out by big four pattern companies, up until I was in my 40s, to realize each and every time I wanted to make something, I was grading out an additional 7, 8, 10 inches in some cases for my hips. And nothing was designed for me. I couldn't see myself anywhere in the community. And there wasn't as much social media or internet at the time that I stopped sewing. So you were really limited to what you could find in a local space. And I just really struggled with it. I returned when my daughter, the cosplayer, invited me to a Frocktails event in August of 2019. And I won a pattern. And as I walked up to get my pattern off the table, I told her, "What do you want? Because I'll, of course, pick one out for you, because there will be nothing on that table that fits my body." But when I got up there, instead of getting her the ginger jeans pattern she wanted, I stepped away with the cashmere Pembroke dress, which came up at that time to about 2 inches smaller than my hips. And I had never in my life seen a pattern that was drafted to fit my body. And I was amazed and hooked. And since that time, I have, in August of 2019, I have sewn over 300 dresses for myself, including over 2 dozen dresses, probably closer to 3 dozen dresses that were just by Cashmere. It has been a miracle and a thing I am so glad to have back in my life, though I have very little patience for people who don't draft to fit my body. How about you, Beverly? What makes you a sewist?
Wow.
How'd you get here?
I got here as just a general maker. I have been a maker my entire life. I change things that I make. I have been a scrapbooker, a knitter. My grandmother taught me to sew. She taught me to crochet and to knit, which, by the way, was no small feat because I'm left-handed and she's right-handed. But we worked it out. she taught me how to make jam and how to make sourdough bread. And I still do those things every week. So
I'm going to need some of that sourdough bread.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to send it to you. I did not sew that much in between when she first taught me to sew until I had some my kids and I made them a few things. Shorts, jammies, things like that, Christmas dress. I took a class to learn how to do some heirloom type stuff on a neckline for a dress for my daughter. But I really didn't make anything for myself until this last year. My mom got a sewing machine. She didn't sew at all. And she bought this baby lock sewing machine. And I had a very inexpensive Singer machine, like their entry level one, where I was constantly getting bobbinets and I was just so frustrated with it. And she says, "Hey, why don't you trade me?" So I said, "Okay, sure. That sounds like a good deal for me." And I traded her. And ever since then, I started sewing things. And first I just sewed some project bags for knitting. And then I decided to sew a top. And I sewed this top that I found and it fit me. And I had to do a full bust adjustment on it, but that's okay. I figured out how to do that. And it fit me. And it was amazing to me. And it was so exciting. And of course I got obsessed with it. And that's where we are now. And I sew almost every day now. I usually have something cut out waiting to go. And I love it. I haven't bought a single thing from a single ready-to-wear item since then.
That is awesome. I have to ask, which baby lock do you have?
The Jubilant.
Ah, nice. Nice. I had a Verve. That was my first baby lock. Okay. And I now have an Altair. And a victory for my serger. I love the baby lock machines.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I had actually never heard of them before because I wasn't part of the sewing community and I'd mostly just heard of Singer and I guess I'd heard of Husqvarna Viking from Joann's. But yeah, that was the first time I'd heard of it is when she gave it to me. So I've been very, very pleased with it.
Yeah, I find them really easy maintenance. And I agree with you. I've had sewing machines in the past. I had an entry-level Brother from Walmart, basically. And the nests made me insane. And it was the point when I decided to buy my first big girl sewing machine. And I ended up with a Husqvarna, I think it was called Ruby, which was one of their really low-end sewing machines. But it was still 1,000 times better than what I'd been doing. And from then, I unfortunately became addicted to better and better sewing machines. And where better is literally defined by price and number of things it can do. Mm-hmm. And I don't even take advantage of a lot of the settings on mine. I'm trying to learn to be more adventurous, but I appreciate the reliability.
So on your regular sewing machine, what are the things that you actually use?
So I use the buttonhole, or I use the variety of straight and stretch stitches. Mine has an embroidery unit that'll embroider up to a like 12 by 18 piece. And I actually use that pretty regularly for things I sell, but also for things for my children and the backs of my own denim jackets and things like that. And I use the design function that has a function where I can basically import a picture I took and it will tell me how to embroider it. And I use the things like that, the embroidery part. That's, I think, a big part of why I upgraded to this one was the debate was, do I get an embroidery only machine or do I get one that does both? And I ended up deciding to go for one that did both because I know myself well enough to know I am not going to pull out and set up an embroidery machine and I don't have the space to leave it set up. Yeah. So if I had purchased it as a separate item, it would be under my table and I would pull it out once a year frantically the week before Christmas, hoping that I could get everything done. So, but I primarily use the standard stitches, the buttonhole stitches, like any normal low-end machine. It's that embroidery unit that really makes my day.
Yeah.
I think it's the first time I've ever had an automatic needle threader that works. Okay, so I'm going to cheat and I'm going to give you a thing you should never do that I do all the time. Okay? So I hate marking darts for busts. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I won't do it. How much I won't do it is that I cut them out. I literally cut them out and I sew them together as separate legs.
Oh my
God. I cut the V out. If you read in almost, but not all, sewing patterns, they will tell you, do not do this. This is a bad, 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 bad thing you are doing. I do it because I would rather cut them out and listen to the sewing people yell at me for doing it wrong than have to mark those damn things because I put darts in everything. Everything I wear has a dart because I've got big boobs and a smaller waist. And so I dart the crap out of everything. And I cannot stand marking patterns. Ta-da! So my tip is a thing you should never do. What's your superpower? I think I know what it is.
I'm not afraid of anything.
And I think that's a really good answer.
That's my superpower is that I'm not afraid of anything. And when I saw some encaustic artwork that I loved and I wanted to try myself, I wasn't afraid to try that. And that involves melting wax and paint and stuff together. So, I think that the risks are pretty low when it comes to sewing. If it fails, it fails. It's, you know, bye-bye, no big deal. But I really haven't had too many fails and I just try what I want to do.
Do you do twills?
I do sort of wearable twills or what?
Yes.
I've done one like true twill and I was trying to do a what do they call those slopers, and so I did that, you know, because obviously that's not for wearing, that's just for fitting for fitting on, but in general I don't do real twills. I have done a few because I got some sheets and did a few things, but even those I did like a lounge set in a sheet, and that's perfect because, do you know, like having your pajamas made out of sheets feels like you're just going to bed naked, and it's really good.
It's completely perfect. I agree. I'm not a big twill person in part because I don't have the patience for it. If I'm going to sew, I want something I can wear out of it. And sometimes that fails me utterly. I make a fair number of things, probably 20% of what I make. I'm like, yeah, it's not for me. And it goes to someone else, but it's not usually because it didn't fit properly. It's because I misjudged what I would want to wear. I might have learned something different if I had done a twill and then been able to adjust and do it, but I kind of use that wearable one, which I don't consider a wearable twill because it's the end fabric I would want to use. You know what I mean?
Right.
If I spend $20 a yard on fabric, I don't think you can call it a wearable twill.
No.
And if it doesn't work out, someone else just won something with expensive fabric or whatever. So it's, I'm pretty casual about it, I guess.
Yeah. I usually do mine in cheaper fabric. I do usually make it in cheaper fabric. But I don't buy a lot of expensive fabric. My style of sewing is a little different than yours. I do a lot of basics. We do more dresses and, you know, nicer thing, you know, not fancier things or smarter things, you know, and I make a lot of you know, sweatpants, t-shirts, elasticated pants, you know, those types of things.
Well, what's funny is I think for both of us, what we're making is what we consider to be our comfort clothing. So for me, darted bodices, gored skirts, and silky fabric is my comfort clothing. People at my office are always surprised when they run into me on a weekend because I'm wearing the same clothes. I don't have weekend wear. Everything I make, I wear 7 days a week. It's the stuff I'm comfortable in for whatever reason. This is where I landed in a comfort zone. But it does mean that my fabric variety does vary a lot. I have discount quilting cotton I got for $2 a yard, and I've got silk that I spent $40 a yard on, and everything in between, just sort of depending on my budget in the moment and where my dreams lie for what I want to make next.
So do you ever participate yourself in sewing challenges?
I don't, because I'm super lazy. And so I want to. I see them. I'm going to try in February. I'll be honest. I know this is coming out at the end of February, so we'll know by the time this is released whether I've been successful. But there's a Black History Month challenge for making something out of a pattern designed by a Black designer. And I immediately, Nandita was posting about it on Instagram. So she's Divine Dita, and Dita Divine. Darn it. Now I don't remember. But she was posting about this, and I thought, oh my God, I'm totally going to do it. And she listed a bunch of Black designers, and I went through every one of them. And I finally ended up messaging her and saying, I can't find any of these that cover my hip size. Do you know of anything else that might work for me? Because she's also a plus size sewist. And she said, oh my gosh, I swear I was talking to some of them and they've either expanded or they have a couple that are expanded. And she went off and found me one called the Goddess Dress.
That's what I'm making.
That's what I'm going to make. I just bought it, but they're expanding that sizing to cover 61 inch hips. And they're going to send me the updated pattern on Monday. So because otherwise it would still be a 7 inch stretch between their top measurement and my butt. Right. And my butt is awesome, so they need to fix their pattern.
The finished garment on that is quite large. So you should look at that, actually, because you may not even need any more than that. Because when I looked at it, I realized I needed to do a smaller size than my...
So I'll check that, but I swear I really felt like I looked, and what it seemed to indicate was that its measurement was for a 57-inch hip, and that its finished measurement was 59, which is... I already was thinking that is not enough ease. That was my very first thought, was that is not enough ease, followed by that doesn't look like the picture. So mm-hmm. You may be absolutely correct, but I'm going to find out. Okay. Right. And we'll see how it goes. But I was excited that they were updating it to include a wider variety of sizes because I want to participate in this one. Yeah. And I often want to participate in challenges, but I'm like really committed to increasing support for less represented persons in the design space, in the fabric space, and things like that. So being able to use what little tiny platform I have to say, hey, I also did this dress by a designer of color is exciting to me.
Yeah. And although this is coming out at the end of February, I know we'll have some speedy sewers on here. So if you're interested in being part of this Black History Month challenge, sewnaturaldane.com is where you can find out all the information about it. She has a YouTube channel, and she has a list of Black designers in both indie pattern world and in... Mm-hmm.
The big four.
Big four. Yeah. So, but do beware, I guess there are some challenges in the list with sizes on that, but it's a good challenge to be part of.
So as a kind of weird tangent off of that, cause it's going to happen, for big four Black pattern designers, Mimi G is one of my favorites who, unfortunately, in the big four, those don't come up size wise. Mimi G designed one pattern for StyleArk that goes up to StyleArk's traditional sizes. just a weird side note. Oh, wow. I don't think it's necessarily easy to find by searching on StyleArch size for that site for that. Mm-hmm. But if you do a Google search on Mimi G and StyleArch, I think you'll find the pattern. That's how I found it. And I was extraordinarily excited when I located it. It's a skirt with a top that has a triangle cutout below your bust to the waistline. And it comes up to a 59 or 60 inch hip. And it was quite exciting. I'll try and locate that so we can put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes for sure.
Because that was really exciting to me. It's a great combination of things.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is your most sewn pattern?
Oh, I know exactly what that is. I have made over 26 Made by Ray Trillium dresses. Over 26 of them at this point. And they are awesome. It's one of my favorite dresses. She goes up to a 59 inch hip in the sizes that she's expanded. And in the ones where she hasn't expanded, she's at a 53 inch hip. So there's some issues there that need to be corrected. But on most of her items, the ones that I've sewn, the ones that come with a dress option, they're gathered. And so you get a little bit of extra width just that way. So I actually haven't had to adjust up even the items that only go up to that 53 inch measurement, even though I'm a 61. I've been able to do them straight off the pattern. But I absolutely love the Trillium dress. It's got a neat little notched cutout neckline option, which I've used for, I believe, all of the ones that I've done. And on my website and on my YouTube channel, I have a video of me twirling in all of them. I was so dizzy when it was done, but that's my absolute favorite. It's really practical. You can dress it up. You can dress it down. It's fabulous for that. My second favorite is the Upton by Cashmerette, which I also sew a ridiculous number of. And right now I'm working on what I call Upton fabric roulette, where I am basically making that dress out of every fabric I can think of. I've so far completed a crinkle taffeta, a stretchy silky charmeuse, and a one out of fun fur.
Wow.
And that picture goes up later, but I've done fun fur. I've done canvas. I'm working on one out of poplin right now.
Flannel.
I have a flannel one right now.
That's great.
Avocados dressed up like Santa Claus in flannel. So I'm working on that as well. So I have
you do.
I'm doing everything I can think of out of it. I'm going to do a lace. I'm going to do a linen. I'm going to do a scuba. I'm going to do just anything I can think of. Oh, I've already bought a faux leather to do it out of. And I'm ordering a polyurethane to do it out of. So I'm going to do all the things you could possibly think of to do a dress out of, just to see how they're different from each other.
That's really cool.
So I made my own challenge. What do you like to sew most?
So most of the things, I'm kind of one of these people that gets excited about a new pattern. And so I'll make a pattern and then move on to the next one. And so I haven't done a lot of the same pattern, but I have made three of the Helen's Closet Gilbert tops. Helen's Closet, that top goes, the hip size, maximum hip size on that is 58 inches. And all of Helen's Closet patterns, I think, go up to about that size hip range because she's expanded her entire range. And that top is a button down top with like a camp collar. And you can do whatever you want with the sleeves. It has like a wide sleeves and also short sleeves. And it has a tie in the front, which is cute, except for that I found out when I first made the one with a tie on the front that in the pants I generally wear, when I raise my arm, my belly shows from it, which is, you know, fine.
Adorable.
But maybe that's for at home and not for at work so much. But I made two others in the other view, which is more straight, but I love where it hits. It's straight. And I may have actually added to the length a little bit because I'm tall and I have a large chest. And so sometimes things are
right.
Funny. But I like things to hit right about at my hip bone. And that's exactly where it just feels nice. And so I've made one out of a flannel and one out of a very light sort of resort looking, cotton wall. Is that how you say that? Voile?
That's how I say it. I don't know if it's right, but voile is how I say it.
Okay. Voile or voile, I don't know. But anyways, it's lightweight cotton. And the first one was out of the Robert Kaufman linen rayon blend. It was a black one. I really like that. But I also have made a shirt and a dress from the fringe dress from Chalk and Notch, which recently expanded their size range so that they have a hip size of 59 and the finished garment has a hip size, has a hip of 71. So it's a more, more inclusive. And it also has a notch in the front like the Trillium does.
Oh, I love that. That's one of my favorite features is little goofy things like that.
It has,
I think those are fun.
That. You can choose either that or buttons.
Yeah. I like things that do that. So for me, buttons are my enemy. So where I have to do a button, I almost always do a snap. So I can make buttons. So I do, if I'm only doing one button at a neck or whatever, but I really stink at being accurate enough at spacing them. And this is the dumbest thing. So I'll buy $40 a yard fabric, but there's a $20 tool you can buy that helps you make the marks for doing it. Right. Yeah. And you're going to show me that you've got it. I won't spend the $20 on the damn tool.
Well, you're in luck because I went to the thrift store and bought one of these and then I got one for Christmas. And so I'm going to send it to you.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah, because I keep looking at it and I'm like, I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to do that many buttons. And then I just do stupid snaps instead. And you're going to love how I do it. So I do snaps and I decide my spacing based on the length of golf pencils. Oh. Because I can just lay it down. I can lay it down and space it that way. And so just my spacing is going to be that. So I'll start from the bottom. I come up. And if my last button ends here, then I just have a second button above it. And it looks intentional. It looks like I opted at the top to do a double button. And then the rest of it's spaced.
Well, so that's my system with this. I don't know if I can send it to you. It might ruin your golf tee.
So my golf tee system is what I use currently because that seems super clever to me.
It is.
I don't know that it's actually clever, but I'm impressed. Here, I just because I happened to find it. This is the Mimi G Style Arc pattern.
Okay, what's it called?
And that gray in the center is your belly sticking out. So it would work really well with that shirt with the tie for you. That's your belly sticking out. And that's the one she did for Style Arc. And what I love about it is its sizing is Style Arc sizing.
Style Arc is a great company. I was terrified to do anything from them because, you know, they have a reputation of not having very good instructions, which is fair. They have limited instructions.
It is fair.
But I think like once we get to a certain level of sewing, we kind of know how to put things together.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're at that stage of your sewing, like I wouldn't recommend Style Arc to a new beginner. But some other patterns are actually quite simple. Very stylish, but quite simple and they have a nice size range. And, I've really enjoyed the ones I've made from them.
I agree. And even as someone who'd been sewing for 40 years, the first time I got one, I was like, that's the instructions. Cause it's like the bottom half of an 11 by 17 piece of paper, like the drafting size. And it's the bottom quarter really that like they folded it in quarters and they just printed straight instructions that are like,
so
the shoulder seams and side seams. And then do the fancy stuff. And it's so basic. But once I got used to that, that's what it was. Honestly, those are my favorite. My least favorite instructions are the ones with all the pictures. I hate the instructions with all the photographs.
It's funny because I really relied on those a lot when I first started sewing. And the thing that was frustrating to me is sometimes people would put in actual photos and the fabric was the same on both sides, so I couldn't see what they were doing.
Oh, that's stupid. Yeah, you shouldn't do that. That's not thoughtful. But yeah, those photos always make me crazy because I would prefer my instructions, being no more than 10 pages and preferably far less than that.
Yeah.
And when you put in all those photos, even a basic pencil skirt where it's like side seam, waistband yeah. is suddenly a 20 page instruction booklet. And I'm confused by that. But I haven't been a new sewist in a long time.
Yeah.
And so it looks a little bit different.
Yeah. It was very helpful to me when I started sewing again, because, and when I would do a big four pattern, a lot of their instructions weren't very helpful to me. I didn't understand, especially because they didn't include instructions on, finishing seams. And,
Oh, that's solid. Yeah.
And so what I really like about indie patterns is most of them do include instructions on finishing seams, and even telling you, hey, finish this before you sew the seam. Or I appreciate that. Now that I've got a little bit of experience, I don't really need that information. I can figure it out myself. But I do think that's really helpful for new sewists.
Okay, so my favorite thing in a sewing pattern, besides that the sizing is correct, is if you've ever done a Friday Pattern Company sewing pattern, they include adorable little illustrations that encourage you.
Yes.
And I really love that. I actually have cut several of them out and taped them to my wall above my serger, because my serger is the machine I am most likely to be sitting at when I suddenly have a mistake I have to rip out that makes me mad, because I am not good at the trick of pulling the right thread.
Yeah.
So for me, when I have to rip back serging, it involves having to rub out all of the thread scrap that I get when I rip it. So I love their little encouraging. They have a little seam ripper that's like, you can do it. And I think those are adorable.
Yeah, I can remember when I was first learning to sew, thinking that when I got good at sewing, I wouldn't need a seam ripper.
Ah, no.
I don't know if I've ever completed a single garment without using the seam ripper at least once.
Oh my gosh. And sometimes way more than once. What's my favorite mistake? I want to hear about yours next, so be thinking about it. My absolute favorite mistake that I have ever made in sewing anything was made in the end of September or early October. I was finishing up a test dress for the Upton, which was re-released by Cashmerette with more options, more sizing, more lots of stuff. So it became a whole new pattern unto itself. And when I was doing the test so quickly, I'd done one and they asked me to do another adjustment to the back of the neck. I got the bodice all together. It's a fully lined bodice. I held it up. No, I didn't hold it up. That's where I made my mistake. I attached the skirt and then I held it up to see where I was and discovered that I had taken the arm and had somehow twisted it into itself so that I had a complete twist around on the arm side. And I now had to rip back the waistband I'd attached, the skirt that I'd attached, and all these things. But I thought it through enough to realize what I really had to do was rip the waistband back about halfway from center front to center back so I could get to the center back seam, open the center back seam, undo the side seam on that side, twist it correctly, sew the damn thing back up again, and attach it all back. Uh-huh. But it was the most hysterically bad mistake I have ever made, and it would have been solved. So now when I make a bodice that's fully lined, I hold it up as soon as I think I'm done making the bodice before I move on to any other steps. So it was a learning experience, but oh my God, it was terrible.
Well, I have more than once put sleeves on inside out. That's actually, I think, fair. I think that's fairly easy to put a sleeve inside
out. Super easy.
I was making Christmas presents for my nieces and Jim's daughters. And it was a double-sided, really oversized fleece thing that you keep warm in the house or whatever, mm-hmm. or outside, you know, it's a hooded sweatshirt kind of thing. And it's anyways, and the armhole, it turns out, is exactly the same size as the head hole. So
oh, that sounds bad.
So I sewed an arm under the head and I had to cut that out, but oh well.
Yeah, that's no good at all. I can see where that would be an issue.
All right. So, hey, do you listen to any sewing podcasts?
So I totally don't. I listen to every kind of podcast available to man, except for sewing podcasts and murder podcasts. And I have listened to some murder podcasts, but it turns out I don't need that negativity in my brain. I do better when I don't throw that in there. So I pretty much stick with stuff related to sci-fi fandom, superhero fandom, being a nerd, social causes. I really love some of the podcasts that NPR does on Black Lives Matter issues and things around that. Like Code Switch is really great and stuff like that. But I'm not a sewing podcast person. What do you listen to in the sewing podcast world?
I listen to lots of sewing podcasts. I listened, my very first sewing podcast when I started sewing was the Love to Sew podcast, which is sort of the you know, queen podcast in the sewing community with Helen from Helen's Closet and Caroline from Blackbird Fabrics. And they taught me so much. And I recommend that podcast to anyone who's getting started in sewing or who, you know, is, you know, they have a whole podcast just on denim. They have a podcast just on you know, bias binding. And, you know, they have all sorts of things that I didn't know about when I first started sewing, and also a Fabrics 101 and things like that. So that you can understand a little bit more about materials that you might need. I also love a podcast called Stitch Please. It's the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, and the best possible name for a podcast. And it's a community sewing practice kind of podcast. She has a lot of interesting guests. She just had the Sew Natural Dane. And the Island Socialists.
Yes.
She just had them on there. I like a podcast called Sewing for the Weekend. It's a mom and daughter team, and it's cute because sometimes you hear the daughter exasperated with the mom, and some, you know, and the mom like just sort of dealing with her daughter being exasperated by her, which I kind of relate to both as a mom and as a daughter. And her mom, I think, is a scientist. So I kind of related there too. And then the other one I listen to is Sew and Tell, and that's brought by the editors of Sew Daily. And they have expertise in fashion, indie, and costume design, theater. And they talk about trends in sewing and topics that affect sewists. So all of those I think are pretty good.
Awesome. Do you watch any YouTube channels?
I do. I watch a whole bunch of those. It's kind of what I do, like right before I go to bed. If I'm trying to read more, but I do like my podcast. I mean, my YouTube, like I said. One of them that I love is the Specky Seamstress. Her name is Laura. She's British, and she has a bias tape business, which I'd like to get some of that. I don't know. Have you bought any of her bias tape?
I haven't. I've looked at it and adored it, but I have not picked any up yet because I have a love-hate relationship with bias tape.
Well, maybe we can, maybe she'd be interested in making a prize for us sometime. I like her a lot. I watch Crystal Sews and Stuff. She's actually a ambassador for the Black History Month Pattern Challenge. And, I think she's right here in Baltimore, which is cool because maybe once we're able to do things, maybe I'd actually be able to meet up with her in person.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
Really good. And then another one I really like, I mean, there's tons, but the other one I'm going to give it a example of is Frugalissima. And this is a woman in Yorkshire in England. And she has a lot of different, she's so dryly funny. You know, she says things that are just so British, I guess. And I really, really like her. And she does a lot of, and she's also interested in inclusivity, and her focus is on price and ability. So she does a lot with free patterns, and she'll try them out because she makes the good point that a free pattern isn't free because you have to use fabric on it and your time. And if it's a terrible pattern, it's not worth it. So she does a good job with that. And I really enjoy hers as well. How about
you? That's awesome. I'm definitely going to add those to my list. Most of my YouTube watching for sewing is need based. So I'll be sewing something and I'll go off to find out if somebody can help me solve a problem I have with it, or just to see what their way of doing something is versus what it is I'm going to end up doing anyway, because I'm pretty opinionated. So I watch Cashmered, I watch other designers who sew you through what they're doing and things like that. But I don't mostly subscribe and follow those. The only one that I subscribe and follow is Sew Natural Dane, who I really enjoy because she's so joyful. She does a lot of different plus size sewing, sew-alongs, pattern reviews, and fabric or pattern hauls, which I adore because I'm all about binge shopping for my hobby. If I am less likely to hit the fabric store and buy two things and then go back again to get another two, I'm far more likely. My husband and I do a circuit that takes us through Atlanta and up through Chattanooga and Knoxville and then back through Asheville to come back to our home. When I want to go shopping for fabric, and we hit a whole bunch of stores on that path. And so we'll take the SUV and return with a fully loaded SUV, but then I won't go again for 6 months. So yeah. That's, you know, I sew a lot, so I need a lot of fabric, but I do that and I really enjoy it, but I love hers. And then I'm going to plug, even though I understand we may cut this sentence, I am going to plug Kitty Cats Cute Cats Are the Best as a channel, because that is my 6-year-old granddaughter's channel. She named it herself, and it's pretty terrible. But if you consider that it's a 6-year-old who's been raised in part on YouTube, who really felt compelled to start a channel that has no chance of ever being a monetary force in the world. It's pretty adorable. You do get to see a lot of cats because, well, kitty cats, cute cats are the best. So that's going to be my other plug for a YouTube channel. I think there are only about 10 videos, so you should be able to binge that puppy in less than half an hour, probably.
That's
cool. It's just one of those things, you know?
As of right now, she has more followers than we do. So,
I mean, that is a solid statement. So they're adorable and really speak to a new generation that's going to embrace different technology. And by the time she's grown up, nobody will be talking about what your favorite YouTube is. Presumably, it'll be something different that we don't know about yet. But they're going to get there by cutting their teeth on that YouTube. So it's kind of exciting to me. And of course, with the pandemic, she's doing remote learning or has been doing remote learning. So she's really good at Zoom and these other things that a lot of us as adults had to really become experts in quickly about a year ago. And the kids just, man, they pick it up. And I feel like I should shake my cane right now to, you know, express my agedness, but it's very interesting to do.
All right. Anyway. One more thing. What kind of sewing practice do you have?
So I'm sort of bingy in almost everything I do. And my sewing is primarily on the weekend. On Saturdays, I start my day off by cutting out 4 or 5 different things, typically. And then I plow through them on the rest of the day on Saturday. And then I slowly meet them out on Instagram during the week because I find that my mental health has been better since I started posting my makes on Instagram. I went from someone who really didn't feel good about my body or the way I existed in the world to someone who's pretty damn excited that I am so awesome. And it's a thing that's like a night and day change for me based on that Instagram. So I really do think about how I sew in order to present it, because I know that presentation has helped me feel more confident in who I am. And so I think I could step away from it and maintain the confidence, but why would I do that? You all deserve to see my amazingness. So yeah, for me, it's a Saturday marathon. And occasionally, because I don't sleep much, when I get up around 4 in the morning, I may come in and do some sewing before I leave for the office at 6. So it's quite a mind.
Do you plan stuff out during the week or, you know,
I like to say that I do, but I don't exactly. So I might set up a series of plans that sound good to me. Well, I really want to make, right now, for example, I need more cardigans. I don't have enough cardigans in my life and I need some more cardigans. I really love the Fuller cardigan by Cashmeret. And I finally figured out how to make it really work for my body and for my sewing style, the snaps instead of buttons and things like that. So I've got it in a place where it's really good. So the next thing I did, because binge sewer also means binge buyer, I went out and bought like 10 fabrics to be able to make these Fuller cardigans. I did that about a month and a half ago. I've made one. And it's because I got too far ahead of myself in the planning. And now I'm not intimidated by it. I can do it. I can knock them out in 2 hours. It's not a big deal. But somehow there's a resistance in my brain to the thing I've already set up to do. I want something shinier and unexpected. Mm. So instead I come home and I'm like, I could make a sequin gown. That's crazy. And I'll go and do that. Instead of sewing the cardigans, I very much need for my actual warmth during the week, right? And so I get distracted by the shiny things that I have sitting around waiting for me to sew them rather than doing the things I have planned. So I'm again, another practice. That's a tip you should not use. How about you? What do you do to keep sewing a part of your life?
Well, I sew most every day. Not as much on the weekends, actually. I live alone. I have a boyfriend that I spend a lot of time with, a boyfriend who's made our music and our artwork. And so I spend time with him on the weekends, although sometimes we're doing our own thing. And so I can do some sewing then. I really like it when I have something cut out before I go to bed, and then I can do, like, when I jump back in, I have something to do. Most of the things that I do, I finish in one day. I don't usually, that's not always true. Like I made, when I made a pair of jeans, it took me more than one day. And when I get tired, I'd let it go. I put it down because I don't want to make mistakes. Or dumb mistakes. I mean, there's mistakes. I don't mind if my seams aren't perfectly straight. That's okay. But putting the arm on the head is the kind of mistake I don't want to make. But I do sew most every day, and I think about sewing all the time. I just had a friend recently call me and say, hey, she wants to get into a creative practice. And she says, how do you commit to your creative practice? And I'm like, what? I don't commit to it. Like, I like it. Like, I can't help myself. And that's why I do it. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it. In fact, that's what happens when I need to make things for other people. I like, don't want to do it. You know?
When I get tricked into making something for someone that I didn't really want to make, that's 100% what happens.
Yeah.
So right now, I don't know if you've noticed, there's this weird cottagecore meme going around. Target created these prairie style dresses that are sort of sagebrush shirt by Friday Pattern Company style dresses, right? Like Little House on the Prairie dresses or things that I wore to middle school and that style. And primarily, but not exclusively, younger hipstery type folks are buying these and then going out and taking pictures of themselves in some sort of sad state out in a field or in a barn or in something else to try and be sort of faux Little House on the Prairie. And I have a friend who's a performance artist who saw this and was like, oh my God, that's amazing. I'll have to get a dress. And she didn't ask me to make anything. I immediately thought, I am so making her a sagebrush top as a dress because it would be perfect for it. And I will be excited to make that.
Yeah.
But if she had come to me, the same thing that I want to make for her and said, would you make this for me? It would take me 6 years because I would not be interested in it.
It feels like some kind of pressure and I can't really explain it. I know other people feel this way too, because I've heard people talk about it. I don't know why it is. I sure as hell am not hemming anything for anyone.
Oh my God. I don't hem for, I mean, I hem a new garment, but if the hem comes down, I'm like, Jesus, I don't want to fix that.
Yeah.
The big joke in our household was that the mending pile was the garbage pile. My children knew growing up, if I said, put it in the mending pile, I would be getting rid of it at some point because it was not going to be mended. I'm just not that person.
The only kind of mending I like to do is like mending that you can see, you know, like, and I do mend my knitted socks because,
well, that's different.
Knitting takes so much longer, you know, and
yeah,
you know, I'm not throwing those in the trash, but, and like if I, you know, if I'm mending some jeans and just making them, but if I had to put a new zipper in jeans, that would take me forever.
I'd rather make jeans than put a zipper in jeans. You know what I mean? I'd rather start fresh and be like, oh, look at that amazing acid wash floral denim pattern and start over than be like, I can go get the zipper and just take it out. And that just sounds terrible. That's the worst kind of nightmare.
It does.
Yeah, I'd pay a tailor for that because I hope that that's a thing they've chosen to do and that they're pretty pleased with their living for it.
Right, right.
Okay. What's something you want to make that you've never made?
I want to make a swimming suit and I want to make a bra.
Awesome. I want to make a bra and I want to make shoes.
Me too. I want to make shoes too. Oh, I really want to make shoes.
So there's an Etsy seller that sells an espadrille kit.
Yes.
Where she's done the reclaimed bases and she uses, I think it's cotton and steel's linen canvas that she uses as the fabrics for the toes and tops. Mm-hmm. And I have that and I've sewn the top.
Okay.
I got stuck when I discovered that between my arthritis and just issues I have with my wrist anyway, it's really hard to sew the top to the espadrille. So I've gotten far enough that if hot glue could solve the problem, I would use it, but it won't solve it. I've got to sew it. And so I've got to take, and I think what I'm going to do is the next time I go away for a training thing for my CPA license, that I'm going to bring the shoes with me and a couple blocks of wood so I can sit in the hotel room in the evening and use wood and a thimble to try and do the pushing through. And just get them sewn on a little at a time. Because I'm gone for a week. I'd have 7 days, 2 shoes. Surely I can do some small portion of a shoe a day, a third of a shoe a day.
Do you think it would help to use like a really fine drill?
What a fascinating idea. I love it. And I think I have like a Dremel-y like thing a Dremel, that might have a fine drill on it. I like it. I'm going to look at that because that would be better. And I'd prefer that even if it meant using thicker stuff to sew it on, because that's a whole other look right there. I mean, you, that can be on purpose. It doesn't have to be, you know, it can look intentional, because that's my big thing. If I make a mistake on a garment, I want it to look on purpose.
Yeah.
So if I've screwed something up about it, I am immediately going to look for a way to make sure it looks like I meant to do that rather than well, on my upcoming, I made a dress out of fur. Because why wouldn't you, out of faux fur? And I cut the bodice out and I only had exactly the right amount of fabric. I cut the bodice out and went, oh, yeah, the nap's the other direction. And so I cut the skirt out with the nap the other direction. I intentionally made them opposites because they have a different look to them. But now the bodice looks one way and the skirt looks the other. And so visually, it looks on purpose to me. May not, but to me, it looks visually like, okay, you meant to do that crazy thing. And people who don't know the nap is wrong may not notice it, because it's not like I'm going to spend all day brushing down on it going, look at how weird that is. it's just going to be a thing. But I had to find a way to mentally make myself feel like it was okay because it was on purpose.
Okay. Well, you have to put a picture of that in the show notes.
Yeah. And the picture should be a video so you can see me brushing it the wrong way.
Another thing which I totally let go was your first outfit, right? This fully lined pink jobby, right? Okay, that's not the part I let go. The part I let go was that it was for the safety patrol that you
100% with the orange thing going across and the badge, because I was meant to be dark when I was a junior, you know, in fifth grade. I was 100% the right person to be like, you're crossing the road wrong. Because I was all about that power.
Not so punk rock back then.
Oh my gosh. No, I was 100% power. By the time I hit high school, I was safety pinning clothes together that I stole from my mom and dad's closet or whatever. But no, as a patrol. I was the killer of all party vibe. I was the one who was going to be like, are you sure we're allowed to have that? Cause I'm going to go tell someone. I was the worst.
Well, I'm absolutely glad that you've let that go. I'm glad.
Well, I'm in HR as well. So to some extent, you can only be so punk rock in HR. I think the way that I have it come out there is that I'm extremely passionate about making sure that workers are protected, that there are set rules that they understand so that it operates in an appropriate, you know, thing. One of my proudest moments was when our company was bought by another company and I was able to add protections to our handbook for people based on their gender identity. And that is something that in North Carolina, where I live, is not protected. You can be fired for your gender presentation, your gender identity, for your sexual orientation. And when the company was purchased, we went from being privately owned to being a public company. And I was able to set up the handbook to reflect what our values are in the company, what we really believe. And that was one of my proudest things. And I think that's a super punk rock thing to do, is to make sure, as part of what you're doing, that the people who are underprotected get that protection too. So a little bit serious, and I know that, but that's, you know, that's all part of who we are and what we're doing here too.
That's right. Well, thank you guys for listening to us. We hope that you will join us next month for our first monthly theme, which is going to be fun. We hope you'll join us at Punk Frockers on Instagram, Punk Frockers on Facebook, punkfrockers.com to come see our hint. And there'll be all the show notes available to you. So have a good week. And we will see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Punk Frockers Podcast is created, performed, and edited by Beverly Baptiste and Jenny Hassler. Our artwork and music is designed, written, and performed by Jim Duran.